This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Some of us would be dead if it weren't for antibiotics. These drugs kill minor infections, as well as infections which used to be life-threatening, such as certain forms of pneumonia, venereal disease, and tuberculosis. But now there are strains of bacteria that are resistant to antibiotics, a frightening development for doctors and patients. Paradoxically, this resistance has been created by the overuse of antibiotics. My guest, Dr. Stuart Levy, is going to explain how this happened and what we can do to reverse the trend. Dr. Levy is the president of the International Alliance for Prudent Use of Antibiotics. He chaired a study of antibiotic use and resistance around the world. He's a professor at Tufts University School of Medicine and a staff physician at the New England Medical Center. He's also the author of the book, The Antibiotic Paradox. I asked him which infections have become more difficult to treat.
Bacteria-causing infections of the ear, which are no longer susceptible or killed by the antibiotics we used to be able to treat them with, and bacteria that make skin infections, urinary tract infections, and so forth, are what we call resistant. And this phenomenon is not just in the United States, but is currently worldwide.
So are there people who have urinary tract infections and ear infections that can't be cured?
For the moment, most people with urinary tract infections and ear infections can be cured, but they may have to go to the fourth or fifth antibiotic. By that time, of course, their suffering has increased, and much to our dismay, some of the children may have to have surgery because the antibiotics are not really hitting the organism.
Are there old diseases that are returning? I'm thinking particularly of tuberculosis. There's now a type of tuberculosis caused by an antibiotic-resistant strain of bacteria. Is this happening with other old diseases that are coming back?
Well, there are old disease organisms, like the causing tuberculosis, which have come back. The tuberculosis organism, Bacillus, is what we call it, is a good example because we thought we had gotten rid of it, and now it's coming back, but in new fury with resistance to 8, 9, 10 different antibiotics. There are other kinds of bacteria that we've been keeping at bay for a long time, such as the pneumococcus, which can cause ear infections, or the gonococcus that can cause gonorrhea, the staphylococcus that causes skin infections, and the fact is they may not be coming back, but they're harder to treat, and to some extent, maybe because we don't hit them the first time, they spread to other people, and so the infection rate may be a little larger.
Let's talk about some of the ways in which this problem of resistance was created. Do you think antibiotics were overused?
I clearly believe antibiotics were overused, are overused, are being overused, and that a large component of the overuse lies in the patient, him or herself. Physicians will often tell me that patients demand their antibiotics. They even will demand them by name and dosage. The patients say, we want that antibiotic. We know that that antibiotic will cure us, though they don't know, in fact, that antibiotics are developed for treating bacteria, not viruses. So you have this demand by the patient, the physician wanting to do well by the patient, and I think incorrectly giving in to the demands. But after all, as I certainly expect, physicians are like everyone else. They want to treat the patient. They think, well, maybe the patient could be right. Antibiotics are probably unique medications in which the patient really plays physician and argues often with the physician at the same level. And I think this is really very curious and has been a leading cause of the misuse of these drugs and the myth created around them that they are so miraculous that they do no harm and I can use them virtually at whim.
Now, I know a lot of people will, they'll get, say, a round of 2 weeks' worth of antibiotics, and if they feel better in 7 days, they'll say, well, I think I'm all cured, so I don't need to take these pills anymore. That's a pretty dangerous thing to do, isn't it, to just stop in the middle of a round?
Yes. The dosage of antibiotics is given both in the amount and the time period as a result of lots of studies on lots of people to determine how much is needed and for how long to get rid of every last bacterium. If you stop the treatment, what happens is you kill off most of the bacteria, but one should realize that when you get an infection, it's not with one or two bacteria. You're talking about millions of bacteria. Otherwise, you wouldn't be sick. So you kill off thousands and thousands, but there's still plenty left. And those that survive are the ones that have survived. So they're somewhat less susceptible to the antibiotic that you've been using. They can grow back. Now, they're just a little bit more or maybe a lot more resistant. So when you try to go back again, you can't treat it. You got to go to another drug. Now, in your case, it may happen to you, the patient. On the other hand, while you're sort of going through this period of no antibiotic, having shortened the course, you still have the bacteria in you. They can go on to somebody else who now, if their defenses are down, develops an infection. But they don't have the super sensitive type. They might have that one which is now resistant. And so when they start the treatment, they can't be treated.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Dr. Stuart Levy. He's the author of the book, The Antibiotic Paradox, How Miracle Drugs Are Destroying the Miracle. He's also the president of the International Alliance for the Prudent Use of Antibiotics. Is there a description you could give for those of us who don't know a lot about science that would help explain how bacteria manage to change in a way that they can resist antibiotics?
Antibiotics were developed to kill or stop the growth of bacteria without harming the cells in our own body. That's why they're so miraculous, something that is unique to killing a bacterium. However, bacteria under the siege of an antibiotic can either mutate spontaneously so that that target that the antibiotic was directed to is no longer there or changed, or they can pick up in the environment a trait which allows them to destroy the antibiotic or keep it from getting inside of them. So in that way, those rare ones that have picked up these traits or spontaneously achieved a resistance mechanism are selected out, and they are the survivors. It's the Darwin theory of survival of the fittest. They have become the fittest. And this is where I see that antibiotics have sort of sped up an evolutionary phenomenon, because resistant bacteria that normally would have been diluted out by all the susceptible strains are being sort of culled out of the environment by the antibiotic, the very drug which was being used to kill bacteria.
Now, antibiotics are affecting us not only through the prescriptions that we're given and the drugs that we personally take, but there are antibiotics that animals take. And we ingest the animal meat and we drink the milk from the cows. How much are antibiotics used now for animals, and how is that affecting the humans?
It's been estimated that almost half of the antibiotics produced in this country are used in animal husbandry.
How are they used?
There are three ways in which antibiotics are used. First, of course, for therapy, when there's a disease. But in that case, you must realize that you not only treat the animal that's infected, but the whole flock, because they're at risk of picking up that infection or maybe sort of harboring it. So in effect, in that one treatment, you're both treating the diseased animal and also protecting the other. So that's the second use, which is prophylaxis, like we often use and we use sometimes before surgery in human medicine. The third way is unique to animals, and that is growth promotion. By that, small amounts of antibiotics, less than the amount that would be therapeutic, are put into animal feeds to help them grow. This was something that was found a long time ago, and the effects of that on the health of the animals or humans who might be ingesting the food and so forth was not considered to be a threat. And yet, today we know that this subtherapeutic use does create resistant bacteria in that environment. The problem is not that these antibiotics get into the food chain, although this could be a problem. The FDA regulates that. The farmers, if they use antibiotics for any of these reasons, are not allowed to sell the animal until there's sort of a withdrawal period so that the level should come down. But the problem lies in the fact that resistant bacteria are being propagated in animals, as I was just explaining in humans, And these resistant bacteria get carried on the meat and food products into the food chain that that humans are eating.
No, if we cook the food, we're killing off the bacteria, right?
That's correct. If we cook the food and if we prepare meat on counters which are separate from, let's say, our salads, then we keep out that potential contamination. And many of the bacteria are not bacteria that can cause you infections, but they do have these resistances, which interestingly enough can be transferred among different kinds of bacteria.
Before you've cooked the meat, if you're cutting the meat on, say, a wood board, a wood cutting board, the bacteria can stay on that board, and if you cut your lettuce on that board afterwards, you'll be eating lettuce that might have resistant, antibiotic-resistant bacteria on it?
That's correct. And so the advice given by the Department of Agriculture, the FDA, and others is that you cook your meat well and that you keep your uncooked fruits and vegetables away from the area where you might have this potential contamination. I think that this is going to be more and more important as we're finding certain kinds of new bacterial infections coming through the meat chain. And as you probably are aware, hamburger has been the culprit in a lot of these transfer of resistant bacteria of problems to human health. And I think the reason here is that most of the bacteria that are contaminating the meats are on the outside. If you're talking about a steak or a pork chop or something like that, we cook them outside, and the inside is not contaminated. We haven't mixed the meat up. In a hamburger, we grind the whole meat so that outside and insides are mixed together. Then when we cook the hamburger, we don't cook it completely through and through. And so the center of the hamburger is never cooked to the same extent as the outside. And inside the hamburger are still bacteria that originally were on the outside of that meat, which was made for the hamburger.
My guest is Dr. Stuart Levy. He's the president of the International Alliance for Prudent Use of Antibiotics. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Dr. Stuart Levy, author of The Antibiotic Paradox. I'd like you to explain what transferable resistance is and what that means for our health.
Antibiotic resistance has two features which involve transfer, and it's almost, in some extent, a science fiction-like picture, because bacteria, which are as diverse in genetic organization as, let us say, a cow and a pig, can actually take a resistance gene and move it to another one. And so you can get resistance gene transfer from a bacterium that might be living in the gastrointestinal tract and getting into a bacterium that might be infecting the respiratory tract, giving you pneumonias. Bacteria that would never ordinarily exchange information are exchanging resistance genes. And that is in large part why we see this cascading spread of resistance from one type of bacterium to another. So that's one kind of transfer. That is the gene itself, the resistance trait itself, moving from one bacterium to another, something that 30, 40 years ago we could have never imagined. The other kind of transfer is the bacterium itself. And this we see examples of worldwide. That is an unusual resistant bacterium which appears in one country that we can tell by biochemical or genetic tests exactly what it is, and lo and behold, thousands of miles away, it appears again. And we know that it is transferred, that is, it has gone, being carried by a patient or someone who's just carrying it from one country to another. An example has been visitors or tourists from Iceland went to Spain, spent the summer. They brought back a Spanish type of pneumococcus into Iceland, never had it before. So you have both the bacteria being moved, and you have the resistance traits themselves.
Boy, those bacteria are really well equipped to survive.
It's incredible, isn't it? And they're so simple. They only have one chromosome, but they have all these accessory pieces of DNA that they just shift back and forth. But let's realize that they aren't doing it purposely. They just do it. And then if we add the antibiotic, we select out those rare recipients of resistance, and they then multiply. And as you know, bacteria can multiply every 20 minutes.
Now, I want to move on to another kind of difficult infection to treat, and those are infections that patients get in hospitals.
Sure.
Why have hospitals bred these really tough bacteria?
Each hospital has a certain amount of total antibiotic usage in it. And what happens is that certain bacteria survive that treatment and then lurk in the hospital, in sinks, in on certain surfaces, on walls. It's rather incredible. And these bacteria, like the Staphylococcus aureus, can then go back and infect another patient. So hospitals are now geared up to really scrub down these hospital rooms to try to isolate patients that might have this infection so it doesn't spread. The other way is, of course, to keep hospitals stay short. And that is part of everyone's plan now, so that you go into the hospital for just the period of time that you need that hospitalization. And then you get home, where we hope, at least this is what used to be, that the community outside the hospital environment would be free of so many resistant strains, and we would be then propagating and living in an environment with susceptible bacteria, which are keeping out those resistant strains.
In the war between antibiotics and bacteria, the antibiotics were winning pretty solidly for a while there. Are the bacteria starting to win now?
It's clear that the bacteria are definitely starting to win, and in certain cases they have won, much to our great concern.
So are there new antibiotics in the works that would kill the new, tougher strains of bacteria?
The present decade has two big problems. One is that bacteria that are causing common diseases are resistant not to one, but to many different antibiotics that we would have normally been able to go to after they resisted one or two. And the second is that in the present decade, the 1990s, there is no new family of antibiotics that is going to come out. So we have to treat the infections we have with the drugs we now have. I know that we can do that and that we can find the right antibiotic to treat. In some instances, it may be only one that is left. But if we use that wisely, I think we can keep resistance to that drug back. However, if we don't make certain changes in this decade, that is how we use antibiotics, then when we reach the end of this decade, we're liable to see bacterial infections which resist all the antibiotics that we currently have.
What kind of research are you doing now in your laboratory?
We have here at Tufts University a center on what we call adaptation genetics and drug resistance. That is how bacteria, mammalian cells, adapt to environmental stresses. And in this case, in many cases, it's antibiotics or anti-cancer agents. We're looking at the basic mechanism of resistance. And when we identify this mechanism, we then institute a program to try to find new ways of getting around that mechanism or poisoning it. One of the major areas is that of tetracycline resistance. Tetracyclines are probably the second most popular antibiotic, but losing tremendous potential because resistance is so common. So we discovered some time ago the mechanism for resistance, and we have been doing in-depth studies of that resistance protein, the one that does the job, which is to pump the tetracycline out of the cell. And we've developed drugs that poison the pump and let normal old-fashioned tetracycline get in. And we're optimistic that this kind of approach will cause a renaissance, shall we say, in tetracyclines that will allow the good old-fashioned tetracyclines to work with just a little tiny bit of what we call a resistance poisoner or a resistance blocker. These are the kinds of ways that I think, knowing how resistance works, that is, human investigators, can actually work against the bacteria. We can use what they show us almost like playing poker. Show me your hand, and then we'll find a way of circumventing that resistance and come up with a combination or a single drug which will not be subject to that resistance.
So you think with a combination of solid research and caution in the use of antibiotics that we'll pull through this okay?
You put it very wisely. That's true. I think that we need research. We need more input from pharmaceutical industries that have left the field. We need government support of both research and development of new approaches to infectious diseases, all of which is very possible. And on the other hand, people, everybody who is using antibiotics, who had the idea that, gee, I could store them in my medicine chest and give them to Mary or John or my neighbor whenever I wanted, got to think twice about that. I'm not really doing the right thing. It's a good Samaritan act, I thought. But in fact, I'm not doing the right thing. And if I don't finish the antibiotic prescription, well, that wasn't a good idea, but I'm not going to make it worse by just taking what's left over and giving it out bit by bit to other members of the family, because I'm really doing no good and a lot of harm.
Dr. Stuart Levy is the president of the International Alliance for Prudent Use of Antibiotics and the author of the book The Antibiotic Paradox. He's a professor at the Tufts University School of Medicine. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.